This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I don't know what episode number it is, because I don't have any notes. I've been bombing along trying to get this book finished, and I am so close. And gonna celebrate wedding anniversary this weekend. So I have other things to do this weekend. So last night I was up till, it was after midnight. I actually stayed up long enough that I ate a little bit before I went to bed, because I normally fast on Wednesdays. But by the time I got ready to go to bed, it wasn't Wednesday anymore. So I had a little handful of nuts at 12:03 this morning, because I was just trying to get finished up. And I just a little more tweaking. I may have some time this weekend, and I may do a little more tweaking on it. But I think all in all, I'm saying what I need to say, and I need to figure out if I'm going to try to go for the, you know, sad parting at the very end. I've had several sad partings in this book, because there's a bunch of goodbyes. People say goodbye, and then it's like, no, it's not goodbye, and then they come back together, and then they say goodbye again. So I may have enough goodbyes in this book, and the last section starts out with what looks like is going to be a goodbye, but then by the time you finish with all the revelations that come out in that last chapter, I'm not sure a sorrowful goodbye is needed at that point. So we'll see. If I don't have to hit the moment, which I'm tempted not to even try there, then I think I'm pretty good. I've said what I wanted to say. So we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, so if that's true, then next week I've got to start scrambling along, getting it ready for beta. Hopefully we'll be into beta sometime between October 8th and 15th, somewhere time in there. Give everybody a month to read it, which is shorter than usual, but just give them a month to read it and get back with me, and then I'm going to start plowing through the rest of them, learning Adobe InDesign so that I can actually format in Adobe InDesign, which I'm not used to doing, because typically I just upload Word files. But you know, excuse me, it's been a long week. But you know, I'm one of those tech people, so you know, I should be able to figure this out. It will be fine. In other news, had some very nice breakfasts and evening chats with friends this week. And that all went well. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. The granddaughter is growing and just as cute as a button. She's spending Monday nights with us now, Monday nights and Tuesday, because her parents are taking an improv class. And so, actually, two different improv classes they're taking. Because Lizzie already took level one, so she's taking level two, and then her hubby is taking level one. And so we're keeping Clara, and I'm sure they're doing fine with that. What else? I think we're good. Anyways, this week, as I said, I was up late, so I didn't get any notes put together. However, there are things going on in the world. I initially thought that I might do something on the riots in the Middle East. And I thought about that a little bit. And I thought, you know, I mean, obviously the easy takeaways from a lot of this is that flesh breeds flesh. But the it really kind of is amazing the level of ease at which we have this offense. One of the things I've noticed, even about Christians, in the last several years, is how easily we are offended at things. And the radical Islamists seem to take that to a whole new level. I mean, I went out and actually watched pieces of this movie trailer, The Innocence of Muhammad, and it is terrible. It is so bad. It's comically bad. And I guess I was reading some article about one of the actors that was in it, and she was saying that they were all duped because they were told it was a Middle Eastern desert film, and so whenever they're saying Muhammad, they're not actually saying Muhammad. She said, we were saying Master George, and instead of Muhammad, and we were asking them over and over, Master George doesn't sound like a Middle Eastern name, and they'd say, no, it's fine, and they shot the thing at some green screen at some church, and I mean, it is just terrible. The acting is terrible. The lighting is terrible. The chroma key effects are just awful. It is laughably bad. And then the actress said that later they had them come in to do some audio redubbing, and so they just say this word, say Muhammad. They didn't know why they're saying these words, and apparently then they went in the back room and put it all together in post-production. And I guess the thing sat out on YouTube for I don't know how long, and then finally Al Jazeera found it, or somebody found it and actually reported on it, and then it just went ballistic. So, you know, people taking offense at things. I was thinking about talking about that, and then I thought, I mean, this is pretty cut and dried. This is flesh, and this is where the flesh takes you. And it's just not helpful. One of the things is interesting, though, is it's not just this movie. It's America. It's all this pent-up resentment at America. And there's a lot of people that are kind of confused about why are these people so mad at us? What, look, all that we've done for them. But you know, flesh breeds flesh. And you really can't go over and support petty dictators and governments and those kind of things. I mean, I understand that some of it is just plain they get offended, and some of it's probably jealousy as well. But we have certainly sown the seeds. Having grown up overseas, I have watched Americans interact with other cultures, and some of it's not so good. I was just thinking this week that you don't really see people demonstrating against Mother Teresa, at least not that I've ever seen. You don't see people burning Mother Teresa in effigy. Or her people, burn them in effigy! Arr, you know. So they're just over helping the poor, being kind, being generous. Maybe that should tell us something. Anyway, so I decided, don't really want to talk about that this week. What I did think about is I have been reading this book on Marilyn Monroe. I don't quite have it done yet, but I'm far enough towards the end that you can see the handwriting on the wall, and wow, this is a sad, sad book. It's interesting because I was watching a video. There was a Marilyn Monroe convention, and all these Marilyn Monroe lookalikes were mimicking her and trying to be like her, and one of the ladies said, Marilyn Monroe is eternal or something like that, because everybody just wanted to take care of her. So her overarching quality, according to this person, was that she had the ability to convince people that they should take care of her. This is not exactly the quality that I would want spoken of me as my life achievement. Although, it is true that Marilyn Monroe worked very, very hard to achieve a certain look, to achieve a certain persona. And she was, if this book is to be believed, a perfectionist. She wanted to evoke certain emotions in people when they looked at her pictures. She wanted to evoke innocence and vulnerability. It's kind of like, you know, the kitten with the big glossy eyes. It's like, oh, here, let me take care of you. That is real. That is one of the things she was going for. And she was very skilled and practiced in cozying up to men and making them her friends. And she had this idea of open sexuality to where, well, if you were friends, you should just have sex. So... it reminded me when I was reading it, what is the name of the bonobo monkeys, I think they are? In their society, bonobo monkeys, they just pretty much have sex all the time, you know? If someone is coming up, oh, good morning, let's have sex. And then, oh, hello, let's have sex. Oh, goodbye, let's have sex. Look, it's time to eat, let's have sex. You know, it's this society where... basically, there's this free-for-all going on all the time. The men and the women, anybody has sex with everybody. And from what I've read in this book of Marilyn Monroe, she would find this a very understandable culture. Because in her mind, you should just have sex with your friends. You know, there's been some interesting things about her and the way she would get back at people she felt like were trying to hold her down or were trying to eclipse her. And according to the author of this book, they were very calculated. They were not an accident. For instance, at one point she made a movie, I think it was called The Prince and the Showgirl, I think, with Laurence Olivier, I believe. I mean, he was some big actor. She made this movie with him, and she was over in England, I think it was England, doing a press conference. And according to this book, she had anticipated that she was going to get eclipsed by this actor in this press conference because he was a media darling. And so what she did beforehand is she loosened the strap on her bra, one of the straps on her bra, so that she could, I don't know, shrug or do something and make it pop loose. And then she could dramatically catch it and have everybody look at her, and then she could be sitting there holding her bra strap and asking, does anybody have a safety pin? And then, you know, obviously someone in the audience probably had a safety pin somewhere, and then someone got it, and so she pinned it up. And, you know, she was a little bit self-conscious about it for the rest of the press tour. And what the biographer says is that the beginning part of the press, I've just lost the name for it, where they meet with the press. The beginning of that, the attention was on Sir Laurence Olivier, but as soon as that happened, all press conference, all the attention turned to her. and stayed on her then. And according to the biographer, she did that intentionally. She planned it. There was another story about her that apparently this was a thing throughout her entire life, that she didn't see the point of wearing underwear. And she didn't have any problem at all flashing people or letting people take looks. There was one director that, you know, she came into his office and he wanted her to lift up her sweater, you know, to see if she actually wore underwear or not. So she lifted up her sweater and flashed him because she didn't care. If that gave her an advantage, if that made her memorable, that's all she cared about. And they said that there were times when her assistant would kind of have to, you know, run over and make sure she wasn't exposing herself. It reminded me, there have been some starlets and singers like this. Like, it's, you know, Britney Spears, when she was going through her crazy period, had a few incidents like this. And somebody else who's a famous actress, Sharon Stone, I think, one of her assistants was, you know, running over to throw a towel over her lap because she was flashing cast members on some of her movies. So, you know, everybody gets to make their own decisions in life, but it's really fascinating to watch how this then all plays out. There was one point where she felt like the people who were choosing whether or not she was going to do the next movie or what it would be weren't paying enough attention to her, and so she had come some kind of a photo shoot, and so she was dressed in some, from what they said, see-through lingerie, and instead of taking whatever, the little cart over to where the photo shoot was going to be, she just decided she was going to walk across the studio lot wearing only this lingerie and nothing else, and she walked across the lot slowly to attract as much attention as she could, to generate as much buzz as she could, because she was desperately clawing and scrambling her way up. The biographer also talked about the fact that she had this reoccurring fantasy that she was in a church, that she was naked, and that all the parishioners in the church were laying on the floor, shocked and aghast, and she was walking over the top of them triumphantly. Yeah, you know, it's a little broken. It's just a little broken. The biographer was talking about how that at times when she'd get under a lot of stress on movie sets, she just really had to fight the compulsion just to take her clothes off, because that's when she felt most comfortable, is when she'd take her clothes off. And then, you know, the biographer is documenting the drugs and the alcohol and the fights and the husbands and the affairs and the getting to the set late once she started to become a star, and wouldn't show up, and then she'd have panic attacks, and then she'd break out in hives, and then her stuttering would start to get the better of her, because apparently she stuttered, and some of her breathy affectations that she would use in her, when she would talk, was a way that she could control that a little bit. I mean, this is not a person who is stable and whole and centered and comfortable in who they are. I was going to say comfortable in her own skin, but actually that's about the only time she felt comfortable, apparently, is when she was only in her own skin. And it's really a sad thing to see what heavy reliance sexuality does to a person, how it eats away at that person, causes them to dwell on appearance and be obsessed with what do I look like and who will take care of me and how do I get people to treat me with respect even though I'm obsessed with sexuality and I present a very sexualized view of myself. It's interesting. As I was reading all of that, I stumbled across another article. And the name of the article was What's It Really Like to Date or Marry a Supermodel? And it was the story of this guy, and it was just one, so that, you know, obviously there may be other stories out there, but there were a lot of things that seemed to ring true when you start reading about this. And he was describing the fact that models really only have a usable work life of about 10 to 15 years. And the only career path after modeling that uses those same skills is supermodel, but you really have to turn yourself into a brand, and there's only a few breakthrough up into that. And so you've got all these women who have worked as models for 10 to 15 years from their teens through 30 or from their 20s, early 20s through 30s, and then it's pretty much over because they won't hire you anymore if you're old. I'm getting my mail. And they don't want to pay you very much, and so he was saying there's all of these women and girls from Eastern Europe that are a whole lot more willing to travel anywhere and work for a lot less, and so the work just starts drying up. And he actually dated one of these models in what he would call her waning years, he said, which is just ridiculous for the rest of the population, but it really was true for her particular profession. That was, he started dating her, I think he said, when she was 24 or 25, and he dated her for 4 years. And he said there were some perks. There's no question about that. I'm backing into my garage. Said there were some perks. He said it was amazing. Said everywhere they went, they got preferential treatment. People would let them cut in line. They would get seated first in the restaurants. And he said, my girlfriend was not one of those supermodels who just kind of looks weird without that heavy makeup on. He said she was just gorgeous. One of those 0.1 percenters. And so he said we would... Everywhere we go, we're getting preferential treatment, including traveling. And he said, I learned very quickly when I was traveling with her to always travel in a suit and tie, or at least a suit coat and tie. To always look good when I was traveling, he said, because when they have people that they're going to upgrade, that they're going to give them a complimentary upgrade to first class on airlines, they usually pick out the good-looking ones. And he said, almost always, we would get upgraded to first class. Almost always. Because the airline wants you walking through, looking at the first class people and thinking, wow, they're really special. And so if you have these very attractive people up there, it gives you this idea that first class is a really special place to be, and maybe it's worth paying the extra money. So the airlines get a little free advertising out of it by just moving the beautiful people out of coach and putting them in first class. I can tell you, it has been very rare that I have ever been bumped up to first class, and the only times I have ever been bumped up to first class was because there was a problem. On the flip side, he said living with this woman was, she was just negative. She was consumed with concern about her looks. And he said, worrying about her non-existing crow's feet. And she didn't know how to handle money because her money would come in these big loads. And he said, I was trying to convince her, okay, yeah, you're going to get this big check, but then you're not going to work for a couple of weeks. And why don't we just put some of this back so that you can pay your withholding tax? And then the time for taxes would come and she wouldn't have money for taxes. And then she would go do a job and this big load of money would come in and she would be able to pay it off. And then when the big load of money's coming, she'd just go out and she'd just blow it on, you know, shoes and handbags and clothes. Her life was just continually in an uproar when it came to finances, continually in an uproar when she was worried about who would, you know, how would she get by in life and what would she look like and what was going to happen when she turned 30. In other words, for all of the physical assets that this woman actually had, her life was in turmoil. And you can really say the same thing about Marilyn. For all the physical assets that she had, and for all the mental assets, she was apparently a very intelligent person. For all of that, when you really look at her life, it was in turmoil. Because flesh feeds flesh. And if the whole focus of your life is how do I manipulate others into getting what I want? What that does is it gives the flesh a breeding ground where it can sow all sorts of fears and concerns and doubts into your life. And that just keeps festering until it creates really an intolerable environment. And I haven't made it to Marilyn Monroe's suicide yet, but she's already attempted it in this biography. And it's really sad. Because we have this idea of the kind, sweet Marilyn Monroe and the fun to be around and the enjoyable and someone who had it all and had it all together. But, I mean, she really didn't. I mean, her life, not that it would ever be possible, but I would never trade the peace and contentment that I have in my life for that type of a life, even if it meant I was making lots and lots of money and I didn't have any concerns about financial security. Because I would not trade my peace and contentment for financial security. There's no way. But there seem to be others that they have determined in their life that they're going to take something which is fleeting and transient like looks, and that's going to be the whole focus of their life. And I'm sure it doesn't tear up everyone who goes down that road, but tears up quite a few. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.